you all saw the famous photo from the weekend of Hillary looking so haggard and what, looking like 92 years old.
Breast implants. Did you have them or not? Because that's all over the internet about you in mainstream media.
I think if you waterboarded Nancy Pelosi, she wouldn't admit to plastic surgery.
The fact that media are so limiting and so derogatory to the most powerful women in the country, then what does it say about media's ability to take any woman in America seriously?
That's an excerpt from the documentary film Misrepresentation, which takes a close look at how the media portrays women in general and how it treats our most powerful women, from the boardroom to the courtroom to the halls of Congress. Joining us now to talk about misrepresentation and the movement it has created is Amy Zuccaro, the campaign director for misrepresentation.org. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've all known about the media, how the media depicts women for a long time, but one of the people interviewed for Misrepresentation pointed out something interesting, that the negative stereotypes, the objectification of women, and the way that we do it now, and such the explicit nature with which we do it, is relatively recent. That early movies, early on in the movie making business, they were much different.
Yes. I mean, I think part of it is the fact that we're dealing with such a sensationalized media industry at this point. And people are looking to make a buck, and people are looking to, you know, keep people engaged, and they feel like sex sells. But in reality, actually, we found that it doesn't. So misrepresentation.org is looking for ways to kind of change the business model for media companies, and really showing them that if they represent women and girls in a more positive light, they're still going to sell their products and their television shows and their movies. And I think there's been some great examples of that recently with, for example, Brave and Hunger Games and some of the television shows that are now out there that really bring women to the forefront in positive ways.
What are they looking at, the people who believe sex sells? What numbers are they looking at to make them think that, if we know otherwise?
That's a great question, and I actually don't know enough about the statistics to be able to answer that. I would say that for years they have felt that if they can shock people will tune in. And people will watch, and so we don't know much different, if that makes sense. And so until we show them that there are different models, then they actually won't be able to. They won't be able to make a case either way.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Amy Zuccaro. She's campaign director for misrepresentation.org. There is going to be a screening of Misrepresentation in Columbus on Wednesday. For more information, you can go and check out the link at our website at wosu.org/allsides. So, Amy, why is this important now? Is the idea to get kids to watch less television, play fewer video games, change the content altogether, which seems almost impossible at this point?
Well, to me, it's really important because you're looking at the next generation of our leaders, right? And if we don't provide inspiring and exciting models for them to look up to, and unfortunately, children watch on average, or consume on average of over 10 hours a day of media through television, film, their iPods, their riding the bus to school, what they see is just images that are so disrespectful. And so they don't see that they can indeed be leaders. And that goes for both women and boys, or both girls and boys. I mean, our boys are seeing that, they're valued for dominance and violence, and our girls are seeing that they're valued for their youth, beauty, and sexuality. And unless we change that, we're not going to have a solid next generation of leaders.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to our Facebook page or tweet us at WOSU All Sides. There are a lot of subtleties of sexism that are amplified in this film, in particular how we talk about women leaders in ways that would appear ludicrous if they were men. And I guess it's the repetition of this disrespectful talk. I mean, for instance, we heard Greta Van Susteren asking Sarah Palin if she'd had breast implants on national television.
Yeah. Or, for example, I think it's really interesting that, you know, John Boehner was, when he was Speaker of the House, he was covered five times nationally in weekly magazines.
That well, Nancy Pelosi never had her face
never.
on a national magazine, which is shocking to
me. Exactly.
Yeah.
Or, for example, when we respond to, when someone references the Secretary of State, they're less likely to reference Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State and instead just call her Hillary Clinton and not give her the title that she deserves. So it's very subtle. But if we continue to get these subtle messages, I mean, it's impacting who runs for office, even if you look at that.
Yeah. You interviewed in the film, many, many prominent people are interviewed, including the founder of the White House Project.
Marie Wilson.
And White House Project was founded in 1998, I think, and, you know, 20-odd years ago. And yet in 2010, for the first time in more than 30 years at that point, women did not make any gains in Congress. Are we going backwards?
Well, I think this last election, the 2012 election, we actually saw some fabulous progress. And I truly believe that it is because both women and men were speaking out and saying that the political leaders that were not indeed, aligned with their current values and their current belief system. So in 2012, we actually saw 20 women elected to the Senate, so are now serving the Senate. That's 20% of the Senate, and 78 women in the House of Representatives. That takes us to 20% women in Congress,
which is an all-time high.
I'm not sure if it's an all-time high. Mm-hmm. I believe it is an all-time high. But you have to think about the fact that women make up 51% of the population and only 20% of Congress.
And that's Congress, not counting all the different state legislatures and everything.
Exactly.
Also with us is Julie Graber. She's CEO of the Institute on Women. It's an independent research institute focused on improving the lives of women and girls in Ohio. Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Anne.
That kind of statistic, you were nodding your head when I said, are we going backwards?
Well, she's absolutely right. This past election was the first time that we saw movement that, at least at the kind of national federal level, that was positive in terms of having 20 women now serving in the Senate. And the Senate's important not only because, you know, a smaller number of women can have impact on decision making in that body. It's only 100 members. But the Senate has also been known as a pipeline to the presidency. So, you know, when you start to think about who might be the next woman to run for the presidency, a likely candidate or a couple candidates may come out of the Senate. So it's got a national visibility that House representatives don't necessarily. And so picking up seats there is a positive on a number of different fronts. The last numbers I heard, however, if we look at the state level races that took place in 2012, we dropped the number of women who are serving as governors of their state in this last election. And it looks like the state legislature numbers are going to go down. Here in Ohio, it looks like we held the number of seats in terms of the number of seats that women hold in our state legislature. But overall across the nation, the last thing I read was that it looked like those numbers were going to fall a little bit. And so that's not necessarily a plus, but I think there's so much focus at the federal level that some of those races got lost in the rest of the media coverage.
There was an interesting segment in the film about the high school girl that was trying just to get elected to sort of a mock governorship, Amy, and she was very cognizant of her struggles and what she was going to have to go through. She'd been doing it since she was in the fourth grade or something. Is there enough of that out there for girls and young women to work on as far as kind of practicing running for office?
There are some absolutely wonderful programs out there for girls and women. I think the White House Project is one. There are other programs like Emerge. I'm not familiar with Central Ohio, but I'm sure there are many programs there. I just think it's very interesting because women really truly have to be asked to run, and then they have to be coached and mentored. And it's a different way in which women come into the pipeline versus men. And so I think we do have to continue to design programs and really focus our attention on mentorship and finding ways to empower women to think of themselves as political leaders.
I think the other thing that I would add to Amy's is that we actually need to continue to put pressure on the political parties to take women candidates seriously. I'm not sure that we've had as many gains there, or that the attitudes there have come around to the extent that they're necessary. And that may vary from state to state, but I know that I hear from some women that it's hard to get support and that mentorship that, as Amy mentioned, from the parties. So getting female candidates who do step up to the plate taken seriously is another thing that needs work.
Around the country, specifically in Ohio, term limits were said to be one of the ways to get more women involved. There'd be more turnover, there'd be more women involved, and that's not quite the way it's turned out. Amy Zuccaro, has that been the case across the country?
Again, I don't have a political background, so I'm not 100% sure. Julie, you may have more information on that. I would say that, you know, we really truly thought that 2012 would be a big year for women because of the redistricting and because of term limits. And in some cases, we saw success, and in others, we didn't. And so, you know, we have to continue to work really hard.
Yeah, Julie, what's happening with that in Ohio?
Yeah, here in Ohio, we do have term limits. So when you look at the 92 election, which is, I think, the first election that had impact on, we did have that. I mean, you had the convergence of the redistricting that happens after the census that takes place every 10 years. And we had term limits, and you had a lot of focus on women running. So between those three factors in 92, we saw a huge jump in the number of women in our state legislature. Our experience here in Ohio with term limits, and I would suspect it's true in a lot of other states, has been, however, that while it opened up opportunities for women, once those women left office, at some point, those women termed out. So Joanne Davison, Grace Drake, you know, any number you look at who served in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a next wave ready of women to step in. So I think the term limits without some kind of galvanizing moment for women become kind of a mixed bag. In some respects, it was a negative for Ohio in terms of women.
You're listening to Julie Graber. She's CEO for the Institute on Women. And also with us by phone, Amy Zuccaro. She's campaign director for misrepresentation.org. The Women's Fund of Central Ohio will screen Misrepresentation on Wednesday evening at the Arena Grand Theater. For more information about tickets, you can go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides or call 614-225-9926. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. And join WOSU TV and Dr. Joel Fuhrman Wednesday night to address the crisis of obesity and chronic disease plaguing America. Over 65% of Americans are obese or overweight, and that number is growing. Dr. Fuhrman has a revolutionary health plan that is not about willpower. It is about knowledge. It offers a healthy, effective, and scientifically proven plan for shedding weight quickly and reclaiming the good health we all deserve. Watch Three Steps to Incredible Health Wednesday night at 8 on WOSU TV. 42 degrees with some sunshine, a high of 46 today, a chance of a rain-snow mix tonight, and a low of 30 degrees. Support for 89.7 comes from Marburn Academy High School, inviting parents of middle and high school ADHD or dyslexic students to a high school admission information session, Monday, December 3rd at 7 p.m. The pathway to college begins at Marburn Academy High School. More at marburnacademy.org.
The ideal image of beauty is more extreme and impossible than ever before. In the old days, the perfection was achieved through cosmetics and airbrushing, but now it's possible for that image to be absolutely perfect because of computers. You never see the photograph of a woman considered beautiful that hasn't been digitally altered to make her absolutely inhumanly perfect.
That's an excerpt from the award-winning documentary Misrepresentation, which takes a close look at the mass media's treatment of our most famous women leaders and how that reflects on the rest of us. Still with us is Amy Zuccaro. She's the campaign director for misrepresentation.org. Also with us is Julie Graber, the CEO of the Institute on Women, an independent research institute focused on improving the lives of women and girls in Ohio. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Amy, there was one scene in the film in particular. It was from a cable newscast, and the female anchor was trying to get away from the scheduled opening story about a starlet's underwear. They just ignored her and ran with the video anyways, right over the top of her. Cable television has played an important role in this issue, in this proliferation. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how the increase in the number of channels has increased the problem.
Well, there's so much noise out there, if that makes sense. There's just so many different images and, you know, bombarding that it's very hard. You know, I would say that it's very hard for parents and for adults to monitor the images that their children see, the messages that they're getting through media, because there's so much out there. You know, we no longer have what Jim Steyer in the film calls, from Common Sense Media, calls the family hour, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what time of day you turn the television on now, you're going to see sexist images of women and girls. And so I would say one of the biggest things that has been really powerful about the film and our social action campaign is the way in which it has empowered parents to say, I don't want my children to see this. And I have a right to create change. So, for example, here in California, we had a group of parents write Comcast Media and say, you know, why is it when I'm flipping through the television the channels to find a channel for my child to watch, you know, something like something on PBS or something like that, I'm seeing violence up in the top screen. You know, I want to make sure that that's not what we see. So, it's created a consumer pressure movement that we hope will really create long-term change. And you know, it's all about, you know, women themselves make up 86% of consumers. So we really truly have the power to vote with our purse and vote with our voice.
That's what is hard to understand about the direction that so much of this has taken. If women make up 80% of the, you know, of the consumers, why then is so much of this content targeted toward adolescently minded males?
Well, I think again, it's somewhat similar to what I said earlier. I think we have to use our voice. We have to make sure that we're heard around what we want to see and hear. And part of it is making the economic case for that. You know, media companies are not going to create change unless they see the bottom line. And the sooner that we can boycott or girlcott, as the central or as many young women are calling it, you know, media messages that are derogatory, the more power we're going to have. I mean, an excellent example of this is a challenge that we did here, you know, the national challenge that we did called It was called Keep It Real. And it was a challenge that Misrepresentation partnered with Spark, I Am That Girl, Endangered Bodies. And we put, it was a Twitter campaign where we asked magazines to commit to doing, to publishing one unaltered image of girls or women every month. And 17 Magazine actually came forward and said, you know, we will. We pledge to no longer Photoshop images of, you know, to alter the face or beauty of a woman in our magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that is, you know, using your voice and organizing.
Julie Graber?
I think the other thing that has to happen is we need to get more women in senior leadership roles in media companies. You know, it's just... you know, we need to have more balance there in terms of who makes the decisions about what's appropriate imaging. I mean, I see so many ads on TV that I wonder if there was a woman sitting in the room when somebody said, hey, we have this great idea. It's like, do you know any women to show them this?
And yet, you know, I was just talking about the case in the cable television news program where she was vociferously asking them, don't run that footage.
Yes.
And they completely ignored her.
Yeah, but she also... I mean, she continued to protest it
right
in a visible way
on
air. So she at least took a stand there. Yes. Yeah.
Amy.
And I think it's really interesting to back up what Julie was saying. Mm-hmm. You know, 3% of creative directors in the advertising industry are women. 50% of women are graduating from marketing and advertising schools, and only 3% of them are creative directors. So there's a huge disconnect there. So you're right. It is around... how do we create programs, again, mentorship, pipeline programs, programs that really support women to enter in and stay in leadership positions?
Amy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Hi. I just wanted to comment, actually, on a commercial that I just saw on TV this morning, and I just felt like it kind of gave a disappointing representation of women. It was, I think it was for a toothpaste, that said, it showed a woman like, she sees a man and it said something to the effect of, he could be the love of your life, he could be the father of your children, and then it said, but first you have to get him to say hello, or something like that. And I just kind of felt like I was transported back to like the 1950s or something, kind of how you were saying just a moment ago, you know, was there a woman in the room when this idea was presented? It kind of just baffled my mind, and I was just really disappointed by that. And then I stopped and realized it was actually a commercial that was on the Lifetime Network, so I was just like, oh,
which
goodness.
Is presumably for women.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I was just kind of wondering, you know, what do young girls think when they see something like this, or even like younger boys who might see something, you know, what idea does that give them of, you know, what's important to women?
Amy Zuccaro?
Well, it definitely impacts, you know, how they react and relate with each other. You know, and how they, you know, how they think about themselves. I think what's really interesting is, you know, the Women's Fund of Central Ohio actually just put out a research project called Our Girl in 2010. They did this, and they found that 58% of girls grades 6 through 10 have issues with weight or body shape and experience pressure to be thin. And now, example of that, I mean, they're getting those messages from television, right? As I said, you know, the average teenager watches over 10 hours, or receives over 10 hours of media messages, is bombarded with those a day. So there is definitely a correlation between issues related to, you know, self-esteem and peer pressure that stem back to the way in which women and girls are represented in the media.
You know, and the other thing is that we do it too. I mean, I think so often when I meet a young girl and, you know, where you kind of search for something to say, and so very often it's something about her appearance.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and it's like I am at least to the point where I am catching myself when I do that, because it just reinforces this idea that appearance is what matters here. And I thought I was watching a replay of Obama's acceptance speech the night of the election, and I thought it was great. When he talked about his girls, he at least started with strong and smart before he got to beautiful, you know, that these are characteristics that we also ought to be admiring in girls.
And I think it's really important for parents and teachers and aunts and uncles to think about that before they speak. I know I have three nieces, and I try, like you said, Julie, I try very, very hard to comment on their brains and their smartness and their ability to, you know, capture a room with an intelligent comment versus when they walk in, they look beautiful.
Amy, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guests, Amy Zuccaro, she's campaign director for misrepresentation.org, and also Julie Graber, CEO for the Institute on Women. If you have a question or comment, want to talk about representation or misrepresentation of women in the media, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. David in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, David.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I guess I just had more of a comment in the sense that I, as a man growing up, I'm 45 years old. I grew up in a house with a very strong woman running the ship, if you will. My mother always took care of everything in the house, as financially made the big decisions, and also held a full-time job. It's interesting to me that what I have found, especially in the political realm, is that I see so many women attacking other women when they have an opportunity. And I'll throw out just a few examples over the past couple elections. When Hillary Clinton was running in the primary against the president, there were many states that she actually won the popular vote, but yet she was completely overlooked and the delegates were given to the president. When Sarah Palin was selected as vice president candidate, she was referred to by women in the media as an idiot or less than intelligent. Same thing, even Condoleezza Rice, her name was mentioned in this past election, and they started demonizing her immediately. Do your guests see that as a problem in itself, that the women who have a voice out there often, if they don't agree politically, then they have a tendency to demonize and just, that's not the right woman, if you will.
Well, do they demonize women of different, I mean, we're very polarized right now as a nation. Julie Graber, is that necessarily part of this?
Well, I think you have a couple of things that happen. One, because we tend to talk about women's appearance and, you know, whether they're emotional or not, that's where we fall back when we don't necessarily agree with them. I think the other thing is that, you know, you have few candidates and therefore all of the instances where these things happen stand out in all of the coverage because, you know, part of my challenge is I think that the amount of discord that takes place among women is greatly exaggerated. I mean, I think that we fall back on this idea that women are can't get along. They'll be in a catfight. And I know so many more women who reach out and support each other. That's not to say it doesn't happen, that we aren't. I mean, frankly, I think we're set up from very young to compete with other women in social settings. So based on appearance and how many friends we have and what do we wear. And that's a really hard pattern to break when we're adults. But it's something that women have got to make the decision to just stop. To just stop themselves from doing it, because the world needs us to work together to build change. We don't advance anything when we tear each other down.
And Amy Zuccaro, the point's made in the film as well that it's not really what's going. I mean, that happens as Julie said, but it's not. It's always happening. There's the fight for The Bachelor. There's the reality television where they're duking it out in the pool and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Those are not, that's not really reality.
No, not at all.
No.
Not at all. And I think what Julie said is right on. I mean, there are so many women out there that are supporting each other, and yet the media creates, I think, this idea of scarcity for women, when in fact, you know, there are lots of opportunities if we support each other and we, you know, and it also comes to men supporting women, I think. Your caller, I think, brought that up really nicely in his comments about how, well, you know, the way in which he was raised by a strong mom. I think the more that we see powerful women in our lives from an early age, and the more men will respect that and embrace that.
David, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. Ken in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. My point is women that get in high positions are driven, and they want to succeed. And that success comes with producing. And though you can talk about women, you know, there may not be any changes for what's on television with women, because they want to succeed, to get paid on producing, just like a man would get paid. And they look at ratings. And if those ratings are high for a show, I think they'd act the same way a man would react. I could be wrong on that, but I like the other opinion. The also thing, I think women that criticize other women, I think are correct. There are certain women that maybe politically aren't heavyweights. And I don't think a woman should support a woman candidate just because she's a woman. So I'd like your comments on that, please.
Amy Zuccaro?
Well, one thing I would say is I think you're right. I think if there's one woman behind the scenes, it's really hard to create change. You know, we need to be looking at a tipping point so that the women behind the scenes are representative of the general population. It's very hard to make a case for something and to succeed if you've got one person there. You feel like you're on a mission by yourself. But if you've got, you know, a core group of women that are supporting something and advocating for it, you're more likely to see change. So a part of the problem is that only, you know, a very small number of people making decisions behind the scenes, especially in the media industry, are women. And so you're right, they don't have the support and the, you know, the benefit of having people who will back them, if that makes sense. So I would say the more that we can, you know, level the playing field for women behind the scenes, the more you're going to see it in the images that you see on television and in film and on radio.
Thank you, Ken, for the call. We appreciate it. You know,
thank you.
Julie, last year, Patty Sellers of Fortune Magazine was in town, and you were in the audience, and you brought up an issue of quotas. In some countries, boards of directors of publicly held companies are required to have a certain number of women participating. She disagreed that was something important. And you, I was wondering if you could explain how quotas might work in a free enterprise system and why would they make a difference?
Well, we were talking about primarily women serving on corporate boards.
Right.
And in a number of countries other outside, obviously not the United States, there has been a range of strategies from hard quotas, which specify the percentage of the legislature that has to be at least a minimum for females, to strong encouragement with the possibility of sanctions if progress isn't being made. We tend to reject that idea here in the United States. The idea of a quota seems to run against everything that what we consider kind of ideal principles. But my concern and what I expressed to Sellers is that I'm not seeing anything else have impact. I mean, even with the gains that we had in this last election, for example, they're small. They take us from a percentage point overall in Congress. The percentage of seats held by women on corporate boards has stalled for the last 10 years. And so, you know, if not quotas, then what? is my question. What is it that we're going to do? Because what we've been doing to date, which is talking about it and mentoring women and, you know, so on and so forth, hasn't moved the numbers. It's more difficult to apply in a setting here where we elect individuals. It's easier where you have kind of parties that are elected, parliaments. When you look at how it might be implemented from an electoral system in politics, but it's certainly something that could happen with corporate boards. And what I would hope we'd see is tightening up of diversity requirements by the SEC, quite frankly. Australia has done this. They require much more transparent reporting around efforts to bring women on corporate boards, and they've seen impact as a result of it.
To prove that you've been working at it. My guest, you've been listening to Julie Graber. She's CEO for the Institute on Women. Also with us, Amy Zuccaro, campaign director for misrepresentation.org. Amy, we're going to say goodbye to you. Thanks so much for joining
us
today.
Thank you so much.
The Women's Fund will screen Misrepresentation, the documentary, on Wednesday evening at the Arena Grand Theater. For more information about tickets, go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides or call 614-225-9926. Coming up, a high school student and volunteer for the Women's Fund of Central Ohio will talk to us about her point of view. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On Fresh Air, you can hear interviews that make you see the world in a new way.
Every drink of water you take, every pot of coffee you make is dinosaur pee because it's all been through the kidneys of a Tyrannosaurus rex or an Apatosaurus many, many times because all the water we have is all the water we have ever had.
You just never know what you'll learn next on Fresh Air. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon. On today's Fresh Air, Hilary Mantel talks about her best-selling historical novel, Wolf Hall, and its recent sequel, Bringing Up the Bodies, about the formation of the Church of England. Join us for that and much more on Fresh Air on 89.7 NPR News. And be sure to join us for All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow. 50 years after his iconic travels with Charlie, hear about author John Steinbeck's legacy. And then we continue with Geek.com blogger Russell Holley's Christmas list during Tech Tuesday. That's All Sides with Ann Fisher from 10 until noon tomorrow on 89.7 NPR News. Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center. November is Personal Healthcare Month in Ohio, and the Wexner Medical Center wants to help people live a healthier, happier life. Information on how to join the Wexner Medical Center and make a pledge to live healthy is at medicalcenter.osu.edu. And support comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, offering perspective in a time of economic uncertainty to help grow and maintain wealth. More information is available online at themontgomerysolution.com. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The average child develops over 18 to 24 years, and full brain development doesn't really occur until you're into your early 20s. So the idea that kids at 8 or 10 or 15 have the same level of intellectual and emotional maturity as an adult is nuts. They have different interpretive abilities, they have different emotional abilities, and they're a much more vulnerable class in society.
That's Jim Steyer. He's a Stanford University professor of law and CCO of Common Sense Media. It's a nonprofit that provides age-based media reviews for parents. He was interviewed for the film Misrepresentation. For more information about how you can see that film in Columbus this week, go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Still with us is Julie Graber, the CEO of the Institute on Women, independent research institute focused on improving the lives of women and girls in Ohio. Once again, Julie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ann.
Also joining us now to talk about that vulnerable generation is a member of said generation, Victoria Ungvarsky. Victoria is a senior at the Columbus School for Girls. She's been a grant reader for 3 years for the Women's Fund of Central Ohio, which is the sponsor of Misrepresentation, coming to Columbus this week. Welcome to the show, Victoria.
Thank you for having me.
Do you think of your age group as vulnerable?
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, everything that misrepresentation talks about is so completely prevalent for us. I think that, you know, the media has really taught us to hate ourselves and taught us to feel that we're so susceptible to the words and impressions of others. So I think it really does put us in a vulnerable position to sort of be affected by our other female peers, other male peers, and by the media.
You know, I mean, when I was growing up, it was I wanted to have a shirtwaist dress and a bouffant hairdo, six kids, and I wanted to be a journalist. But there was nothing about sex appeal in there. That's really been a big change.
Sex appeal is a huge part of it. It's not enough to be sort of not enough to be intelligent or independent or smart or hardworking. You have to be pretty. You have to have the perfect body and you have to be desirable.
And is that true, Julie, in the boardroom as well? I know that people make a fuss over politicians, but do we do the same thing to women at the higher levels of industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's maybe not as extensively or maybe more subtly, but there's research that shows that appearance can play into decisions about promotion for women. It starts to, I mean, it's not only appearance, but personality characteristics that we expect in women. And as a woman isn't kind of that stereotype, it can hold her back because she doesn't conform to what people think is acceptable.
You know, Victoria, it's like your generation should have had every advantage that we didn't have. You know, the paths have been well worn by now in some ways, but they're creating new paths. I mean, new challenges and new demands.
Absolutely. I think it's gotten a lot easier and a lot harder. I think that there are so many different pathways now in terms of education and jobs that girls can now have that they couldn't have before. That being said, there are still so many sandbacks because of sort of this new way of looking at women.
Michaela, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I wanted to add to the comments here that this isn't just about the media creating lower self-esteem and this young girl's desire to be desired by others. This is leading to the increased rate of violence and dating violence in teenagers all the way down to middle school. You're having more and more girls report that their first relationships are violent, and that leads on into their adult years for expecting violent relationships. They're expecting that to be part of the relationships because that's how they feel desired. It goes beyond just this low self-esteem in adolescence.
And just goes beyond what you might make in a paycheck someday, Victoria.
Absolutely. I think the hardest part about so much of this misrepresentation and the sexism is that it makes it hard for women and for men. It teaches girls that they're supposed to be vulnerable. It's that they have to, that if they're confident about themselves, it's not okay. But it also teaches men that they're supposed to be strong. And I think that definitely leads to sort of this dating violence.
Michaela, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. Email from Cecile. What about the princess phenomenon that is marketed to little girls? How do I encourage my 3.5-year-old daughter's enjoyment of dress-up without having her be too focused on her looks? There was an important point made in the film that even though it's Cinderella or it's Sleeping Beauty or whatever, their lives still revolve around and are very, very much, even though they're the protagonist supposedly in the film, their lives still revolve around the male protagonist in the film.
I think it's something that's completely prevalent, and there's so much media marketed for girls with female protagonists that when they're not really the main character, they're sort of a side entity, and they're not important to the story. And I think one of the ways is we have to encourage stronger female role models. It's hard to find them in the media. When you find them, you have to embrace them.
Well, even the strong role models, if you want to talk about the superheroes and stuff that they've, you know, made for women, they're
so often
still
they're sexualized.
Sexed up.
And they're still princesses. I mean, you know, it's, mm-hmm. I think that parents need to be really sensitive to the fact that there's been a huge marketing push to around this whole idea of being a princess.
It's not just by chance.
No, there's this great book, Cinderella Ate My Daughter. And, you know, it looks at the amount of marketing dollars that go behind this idea that the ideal for a young girl is being a princess. And I, you know, to the point that while I recognize reality TV is what it is, I don't think shows like The Bachelor or Toddlers and Tiaras are doing us any favors.
Yeah, Toddlers and Tiaras. Victoria, what do you talk about with your friends? Are you actually talking about this sort of thing, or is it not cool to talk about it, or is it because you're associated with the Women's Fund and you're already surrounded by like-minded people, and that way it's not a problem for you?
It's still a problem, honestly. I think I feel more comfortable talking about sort of my vulnerability, my insecurities, the things I'm feeling, than a lot of other people are. It's considered weird. I think we all feel that we're alone in this, even though we all know that every girl feels the same. You don't actually appreciate that every other girl hates her body and hates herself and thinks that she's not worthy, even though she's done so much already. I think it's a universal theme, but we still feel sort of that we're alone in an island that no one else can understand us.
I was with a group of talk group of people that included a lot of really super high functioning OSU Newton soon to be grads, and was shocked how many of them ended up kind of having a little bit of a mini meltdown, fearful of their future when they had everything going for them, and they were just afraid. And it makes me wonder, is there this under, they're getting the good grades, they're going to the right college, they're getting the right degrees, going on to law school or whatever it might be, but they're still very afraid. Is that part of it, Victoria?
Like, it's almost like we're scared of success in a weird sort of way. Is I think that even though girls are making so many more strides, they're getting more jobs, they're becoming more independent, there's still this weird thing in the back of our mind saying that this isn't our place. We're not supposed to be here. We still need to find a husband, have children. And it's possible to do all that and still hold a job. And still
just like
have
a guy.
Exactly. It's completely possible. But for girls, you have to factor that into your life plan. You don't have to think, I'm just going to get a job. I'm going to work. I'm going to go to the school. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to do all these great things. And family will happen when it happens.
You know, Julie, another element of the film that was interesting is how women sort of fall off the screen in their mm-hmm, 40s. Mm-hmm. And they connect that with the age of, reproductive mm-hmm. years ending about then. But it's shocking. The 67% of the women in this country are 40 or older. And it's like 17 or 20% or something are represented on television.
Yeah. Few and far between in the lead role in terms of a character that is, you know, late 30s, early 40s, heaven forbid 50s, and in a role of power that isn't, that doesn't also to conform to some stereotype of, I mean, I'm thinking of Damages, you know, with Glenn Close. So, you know, I think it's what it's really tough, because what I hear from young girls is this, still having this question about how do I manage career and having a family, because we haven't solved that issue. I see and I hear young women who limit themselves because what they have picked up from their parents' experience is that it isn't possible. And, I think they are told for so long through college, you know, you are as equal to a guy, you can be anything you want to. But then they start to realize that there still are limits, especially limits placed in once you go to work, that treat women differently than men, in spite of the fact that that maybe hasn't been the case up until they graduate from high school. And I'm really concerned about the message they're getting from us that you can't mix a career and family, because the reality is most families can't get along unless you can mix, unless both, you know, two people in the household can mix family and a career.
They don't survive. Doug in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. You know, this question kind of dovetails in the comments that were just made then. I'm kind of, before the break, one of your speakers, I can't remember which one.
Yeah, Amy Zuccaro from misrepresentation.org.
Well, one of the speakers said that women just have to stop teaching girls the inappropriate ways of looking at themselves. And I'm kind of wondering if either of your speakers could make a comment about how that might happen. Like you've just said, Anna, a lot of times the people who are most vocal about teaching appropriate role models for girls and such are the people who themselves may no longer themselves be tied to some of the stereotypes. But girls who are out there are still being encouraged by not just the media, but sometimes their own mothers and fathers to try and be cute and look their best and put fashion above career.
They talked about, I think it was in connection with the toddlers and tiaras, what they spend on the clothes and the entry fees and so forth for 1 year of that would pay for 2 or 3 years in a community college or something like that. I mean, obviously, the priorities are very off base.
Well, I think it reinforces the idea that it's not just men who have to change, it's women as well.
Because they're the stage moms.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and not just the toddlers and tiara moms. I mean, there is research that shows that the girls get sexist attitudes about themselves, both from their father and their mother. And it goes back to the comment I made about not commenting on whether she's pretty or not. at Thanksgiving, you know, don't ask the young girl to help set the table, which I'm guilty. I did it, you know, before I caught myself, you know, because we reinforce those. We're brought up that way. We're socialized that way. And we have a tendency to reinforce those. So it really is about catching ourselves and stopping the perpetuation of it in both men and women, moms and dads.
Hey, Doug, do you think it says on my description of your call, what can be done by adult women to help young girls? Do you think it's just about adult women?
Oh, no. Okay. No, definitely not.
Okay.
I think, though, that adults in general, through marketing and such, promote the idea that youth is beautiful. I mean, look at male models, look at female models. As one of your speakers said, they're computer enhanced to look impossibly gorgeous. Either way, the kids are just getting the wrong message, and young adults are getting the wrong message that looks are everything. And no, it's not just young, it's not just adult women, it's adults in general. I'm not teaching this to my own son, but I'm coming up with other parents who are teaching their kids that. Just for a ninth grade homecoming dance, for example, unless you've spent $250 on an outfit and hairstyling and facial and things like that, you really haven't gone to your first dance. I don't think I spent $15 on my first
dance. I've never been to my first dance. Never, never. Doug, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We have an email from Anna. She says, I find this idea of quotas as a struggle to get more women into positions of corporate power very upsetting. Why should we be forwarding the idea that women have only succeeded if they've succeeded in a traditional masculine sense? Women have different goals in their work and in their careers, and I think the real problem is that women-dominated fields are undervalued, the arts, healthcare, education, social work. We should be working to elevate these fields in society and culture, not fretting over women being underrepresented in positions they aren't focused on anyway. Julie?
Absolutely agree with the second part of what she said, that we need to value women's work. When we look at, there's a ton of research. We absolutely need to get more value for women. The challenge is that we need both men and women at the table. There is study after study after study that shows that groups make better decisions when there's diversity around the table. The final report on the BP oil disaster in the Gulf said that by the federal government said that better communication, better training, more creative problem solving would have at least alleviated some of the impact. And VP is all men at the leadership level. Women have to step up. You know, it's like we have a right to be at the table, but we also have a responsibility to be at the table because having us there makes a difference in the decisions we make.
Julie Graber, thanks as always for joining us today. Julie Graber, CEO for the Institute on Women, and also Victoria Ungvarsky. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Victoria is a high school student and volunteer at the Women's Fund of Central Ohio. Thanks to everybody for listening. The Women's Fund will screen Misrepresentation on Wednesday evening at the Arena Grand Theater. For more information, go to our link at our website at wosu.org/allsides or call 614-225-9926. Thanks for listening. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus and streaming on the web at wosu.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.